host. Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson.
That's why we're here today. It's moneyformongo.com. Thank you for watching on YouTube or for watching on Fight. This show is absolutely free. We're all coming together to support the great Steve Mongo McMichael. Every little bit helps. Please hurry to moneyformongo.com. Every single nickel goes directly to the McMichael family. And boy, we've got a cast of Hall of Famers with us today. Although he is saying he will refuse the nomination to go to the Hall of Fame, the voice of your childhood, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Schiavone. And, of course, the voice of professional wrestling, the WWE Hall of Famer, the legendary Jim Ross. The latest addition to our podcast network, number one in your hearts and minds, the hardcore legend, the Hall of Famer, Mick Foley. And all these years later, we're back together. It feels like it's been forever since I've been hanging out with Jeff Jarrett. Actually, it was just a month ago when he tried to kill my father-in-law. WWE Hall of Famer, Jeff Jarrett, ladies and gentlemen. I can't believe this is real, but we've got Eric Bischoff here, and he's got a beer. We're getting kicked off the air on a free show. Eric Bischoff, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, the guy who is maybe most synonymous with Mongo in his wrestling career, our guest of honor, if you will, ladies and gentlemen, the 16-time world heavyweight champion, or 21, depending on who's counting, the Nature Boy himself, Ric Flair, ladies and gentlemen. When Tony Schiavone just shook Ric Flair's hand, he goes, "Nice to meet you, sir. Big fan."
For a lot of reasons.
You know,
I have entertained Mr. Schiavone over the years, aside from television.
You've entertained a lot of people over the years, and I'm sure you've had a lot of fun.
Mr. Bischoff as well.
Rick, we're here today for Steve Mongo McMichael, somebody you've been in touch with a lot, even recently. I saw you talking to him just a few minutes ago on FaceTime. Catch us up about what's going on with Steve and why we're really here today.
Well, his wife, lovely wife Misty's here too. So I'm guessing it's almost 3 years ago, Steve. Yep, there she is. Big round of applause for Misty, guys. Bravest woman in the world. So, Misty, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been about almost 3 years since Steve got ALS. Am I correct? 3 years, 2.5, and he reached out to me, and I don't know if you know anything about Lou Gehrig. I'm not sure what generation we're talking about from, but I mean, that, ever since I've seen so many critical conditions and ways of life, but that ALS is something that to imagine that this all-pro 285-pound tackle that should by all means be in the Hall of Fame, which is ridiculous. Better stats than Warren Sapp. I mean, realistically. I would guess his body weight now is maybe 160 or 70 pounds. And he's 209? Oh, fantastic. Well, anyway, to be a guy that bench pressed 600 pounds legitimately one of the toughest guys I've met in my life, and more fun than anybody I've ever spent time with. I mean, Steve McMichael is a gift from God to all of us, and so glad we could get together. You know, everybody's got their own agendas in life, everybody's got their own issues, but I think we all can agree that if we have an opportunity to all get together on the same format and support someone like Steve, who's going through this, and anybody else that suffers from this terrible disease. So we're all here, and we're thankful you're here, and I hope that the people watching us live know that, like I said, everybody's got issues in life, but nothing would supersede what Steve's going through right now, not in my personal life, and I've been sick a couple times, but never left with the condition Steve's in. So thank you for coming out. It means a lot to all of us.
Of course, this show is free right now. We encourage you to go make a donation, moneyformongo.com. But, Jeff, you and I recently talked about Mongo not too long ago, and Rick just referenced it, a 600-pound bench press. You've been in the ring with a lot of guys. Where does Mongo rank as far as just brute strength?
I always kind of get asked the bullet point questions, who's the best. I always say Shawn Michaels. Oh, no, sorry, Rick. Sorry, I want to start off on the right foot. But no.
You shot yourself in your Hall of Fame induction speech. Okay? LeBron James, okay, I don't think so.
Anyhow, just when I get interviewed, just best match, best opponent, all the kind of best. And a lot of folks have asked, who's the strongest guy or the quickest guy and all kind of athletic accomplishments? Kurt Angle was a next-level athlete. Scott Steiner, another guy. You look at Big Papa and all of his muscles, and you don't realize really how fast and quick he is inside of a ring. But a lot of times people get surprised when I say, when I'm asked, who's the strongest guy you've ever been in the ring with? And I immediately say, it's an easy answer, and it's Steve Mongo McMichael. When I went to, and Steve used to call it, and Tony, you will probably remember this, he didn't ever say, here in WCW, it was here in the WCW. It's how Mongo, he always called it the WCW. But when, 96, 97, when we were doing, when I was leading the Four Horsemen, and Rick was on the shelf. having fun, Rick, Nate. We're having fun for Mongo. But I had a series of matches.
You mean the time when I was fired for a year?
Hello? Which year was that? Well, Eric is a better authority on that than me, but we won't go there. I just remember, and we'll make this quick. We got a big panel up here, Conrad. But getting to work with Mongo, and let's just say, and JR can probably say this much more eloquently than I can. Mongo was not polished in the ring. I'll just say that. He was not polished. But he wanted to do a move where I came off the rope, and we did a side slam a lot of spots, and he wanted to do the thing where he would flip me all the way through, and then we called it the Davy Boy Smith kind of power slam is what he wanted to go into. And so one night, coming off the ropes, he grabbed me, and when he flung me up, he flung me on his left shoulder. And I had no choice, and now we're up there, and he's holding me with his right arm, but I'm on his left shoulder, and it's awkward as hell, and I'm rolling off this shoulder, and he just kind of lets go, but then grabs me by my shoulders and everything, and he picked me, and then he got his other arm. I had no choice. He flipped me from one side to the other side on the shoulder, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then we went to slam. But he was unbelievably strong, just kind of freakishly strong. But, yeah, me and Mongo, we had some interesting matches, to say the least. But he was a character, I'll say that, in the WCW.
And Tony Schiavone, you were there for a lot of those great Mongo moments. You got to spend some time with Mongo, you know, when he was at maybe the peak of his wrestling career. We'll call it 96, 97. What are some funny Mongo stories you can share with us today?
That I can share with you?
Or maybe you could.
Okay, I can't share any of them with you. No, I first met Mongo when Eric, you brought him in as the announcer on Nitro, and he had his little dog with him.
Pepe.
And I'm thinking, what the hell is this badass doing with a wee little dog in his hand, right? But he had such a great, wonderful personality that even though he was not polished as a wrestler, nor was he polished as an announcer, he made it work, I thought. I really thought he made it work. And he... Go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, that was the magic. See, he had such a big personality that he didn't have to be polished. He didn't have to be finessed.
Right.
He was so entertaining, and his personality was so big, and he was so freaking entertaining that even if he chops himself up, you enjoyed being a part
of him. Right. And I got to be very good friends with Kevin Butler, who was a kicker on the Bears team. And Kevin and I...
There
is a Jim Barnett story in there, but we won't talk about that.
My boy.
So, but he and I talked a lot about Mongo and about being friends with Mongo, and he told me, he said, of all the guys on the Bears, he was the badass. He really, really was, and there were a lot of badasses on that team. Maybe the greatest football team of all time in the NFL. 85 Bears, no question. But then when someone like Mongo, who leaves the NFL, becomes a part of us, and we all know this, you become a part of us, you're a part of us for life, right? I mean, here we are all together again. We've gone our different ways. And yes, it is, Jim. Right. Okay. Here's another one. Just when I thought I was out, they brought me back in. Okay, there's another one for you. But once he became a part of us, it was like, man, you didn't think of him as an NFL player anymore. You thought of him as one of us and a wrestler who was raw in many ways, but like you said, Jeff, God, he could do a lot of things. I thought he was a great announcer. I thought he was a great color guy because he was just himself. And the best announcers to me are just themselves. So that's what I remember more about him.
And Eric, you gave him the opportunity to be one of the main voices of Nitro when it first kicked off. Of course, you famously didn't allow Tony Schiavone to be that voice. You put yourself in there. But we'll talk about that another day.
For obvious reasons.
Right. Jarrett wouldn't use me either. But that's okay.
We love each other here. We really do.
I'll just tell you a fun story, and we'll stop shooting here.
Okay.
Well, otherwise, I'll have to get involved again. So Eric calls me, and he said, you know Kevin Green real well. I said, yeah. He said, why don't you ask Kevin if you think about coming over to WCW, and we'll tag you and Mongo, tag him and Mongo up to wrestle you and Iron. So I called Kevin, and Kevin, and they both became very close friends. And as you all know, Kevin passed away 2 years ago. Wonderful guy, but he got in the Hall of Fame just the year before he passed away, so it was tragic. But Kevin, anyway, so we'd go to Atlanta, we rehearse. Here's Nita Wonder, but I've wrestled. And where Mongo was just relaxed and patient, Kevin Green ran at a different speed. I mean, he wanted to beat everybody in the dressing room that thought he was doing something wrong. I mean,
wake up in the morning and his eyes were this big. He never got smaller.
So we're having this match, we're working out, and we're having fun, and we get the heat on Mongo. Mongo's selling back and forth, and then we gave Kevin Green says to me before we go out, he said, "Can I suplex you too?" I said, "No." The only thing that made me feel any comfort at all is we fed. I took the original tag. He bounced me around, did give me a suplex, jumped on me, beat the hell out of me, and then Iron fed, and he came out of his stance. And I wish Iron was here to share the moment. And Iron's one of these talented guys, gifted in our business. He can take that cartwheel flip when you get hit, but you know, Iron can spin right in there, right? He didn't have to take it. Kevin Green hit him so hard with that forearm shiver. Arm flipped completely upside down. I couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't wait for the briefcase to come in. Get hit in the head. Oh, my God. But, man, they were so special. We went back out, and Mongo was like, oh, man, it was so much fun. And Mongo's like me. We just went right to the bar, you know. Yeah. Why even go to the room and put your bags up? Let's go right to the bar and celebrate the moment. Why waste a half hour getting the going upstairs and cologne on, right? They're already here.
Yeah, he was another level on that that account. He was.
No shit. I got more money than you got time, kid. That's what he used to say to me.
Yeah.
Jim, what was your experience with Mongo?
Broadcaster of the year right here.
I had good experiences with him. I had to calm Reggie White down because Mongo was, as Reggie said, was flagrantly cursing at WrestleMania. What WrestleMania were those guys?
11.
11, yeah. And whatever, you forget them. They come and they go. It's I worked WrestleMania.
They run together, buddy.
Good for fucking you. Good for you. Cause it's all about you, right? I'm telling you, Reggie was a very religious man, and hence the Minister of Defense moniker. But he didn't like. He resisted the overuse of foul language. And I think one thing we can all say at this dais, if that's what they call these things, is the fact that Steve was just. He was free-flowing, man. He could be around the women. He could be around the clergy, the priest, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. He didn't give a shit. So he was just an outspoken, uninhibited guy. And, the only thing I didn't like about him, he played at Texas. I cannot condone that. I'm sorry. I just can't. But he was a hell of an athlete. He's a badass and a nice guy. I'm glad that we're doing this for him and his family. So I hope everybody's generous today. And don't keep your goddamn hands in your pockets without pulling out some money. Help the guy out. Help the family out. Do something good. You won't believe how good you will feel when you do something nice like this. You just won't. It's a great gesture. It's a great thing to do. So, but I have great respect for him as a ball player. Was he the second coming of Kurt Angle or Lou Thesz or Stone Cold or Rock? No. But that's not what he was booked for. He was booked to be himself, and he did a damn good job of being himself. So I have a lot of respect for him, and even though he's a Longhorn. A Longhorn is a steer. Steers ain't got no balls. Not nary a one. But he had plenty of balls, and he still got them, and I'm glad we're here. I'm going to stop now before I go to fucking jail.
We're happy to report he does still have his balls, and we hope that you guys will make a donation over at moneyformongo.com. We were talking about the Bears earlier, and I know you're.
Wait, Conrad, you're not going to segue, give handoff Mick to. So, Mick, what do you have to say about balls?
Testicular fortitude, baby. You were a big football fan, and I don't know that everybody knows that, but your longtime team, for as long as you've been a fan, was the Bears, right?
Yeah, I would be what you call a long-suffering Bears fan because I came up in 1970 with a photo, a poster of Dick Butkus.
Number 51
over my bed. And in the strangest coincidence, years go by, and my brother's brother-in-law ends up teaching Dick Butkus's granddaughter on a soccer coach and says, Mick, I think I can get that poster signed for you. This is 30 years later, right? And 2 years go by, I don't hear a thing until Dick Butkus and I are simultaneously doing a signing at a Northern Indiana hospital groundbreaking ceremony. I said, Mr. Butkus, this might sound strange, but my brother's brother-in-law, he goes, you the guy with the poster? I said, yes, I am. He goes, I've got that in the trunk of my car. And he took it out and he signed it, and it's in a place of honor. So yeah, I love the Bears, and I remember. I'd only met Mongo one other time. It was a TNA show in Chicago, but Misty put me on Facebook with him. And the first way you can cut through the chase and say it's one thing to say you're a Bears fan, and another thing to say I subscribe to Doug Buffone's Chicago Bears report. which was like the kayfabe sheet of Chicago Bears fans. But like Conrad said, this ALS, it is a devastating disease. And unlike everyone else up here, I did not know Mongo on a personal level. But what struck me in that announcement he made 3 years ago was his sense of humor, his determination to fight, and third, how often he mentioned his wrestling career. Like, he mentioned his wrestling career as much, if not more, than his days as a Chicago Bear. And so I'm so proud when I told Conrad I wanted to be part of this, and I was just a few hours away. I'm so proud to be up here with people who did know him better and loved him so much. And I'm telling you, there's strength in numbers. Even if it's $5, $1, $10, that stuff adds up. And if we have some heavy hitters out there, obviously, that adds up as well. But we're all in this thing together. I really believe we have to look out for each other in this crazy business. If one of our guys is hurting, we should try to lift them up. And I think that's what this whole afternoon is about. So if you're out there and if you have the means, please support this great cause. And if you don't, get the word out so that others might. So thanks for having me here.
Well said. Moneyformongo.com is where you can make a donation. Again, 100% goes directly to Mongo's family. And Eric, I'm curious, how did you have the bright idea to get Mongo involved in wrestling, or how does that come to be?
Look, with Nitro, we wanted it to be bigger. We wanted to appeal to as broad of an audience as we could. And I can't remember to this day, and I was thinking about this on the way here, I don't know how I first made contact with Mongo. I don't know if he reached out to me, if I reached out to him.
Because I asked him that. I was fascinated. There's a whole, my father and grandfather.
I don't care about anything.
I know, they didn't like the Bears. Harvey Schiller.
Harvey Schiller did.
The connection. I asked Mongo, like, what was the initial connection? Somehow he had a connection with Schiller, and I think Schiller contacted you.
At least that makes sense, and I love that. And I remember when I met Mongo for the very first time. It was down in Orlando. We set that meeting up down there, and I just, you know, I lived in Minnesota, Minnesota Vikings, you know, Chicago Bears, the 80s, kind of a big, so I was well aware of who Steve was. And, you know, a little intimidated, a little over-impressed, got to admit it, and I sat down with him over lunch, and Steve was one of those guys that you could sit down with for about a minute and a half and feel like you've known him for 20 years. He was just that guy. And he had so much charisma and such a big personality. And Tony's right. He wasn't polished. He hadn't had a lot of broadcasting experience. He was a wrestling fan, but he wasn't like a wrestling, walking, talking encyclopedia, right? He just was a fan, and he loved it. And he loved it so much, and he had such a big personality and such a great sense of humor that it didn't matter.
No, that's right.
It really didn't matter. And the other thing, I won't go into the weeds, I promise, but Nitro worked because it was live TV. Live TV, in my opinion, works because it's not quite so perfect. And every once in a while, a Mongo boss was like the funnest part of the show. You know, it's like a highlight reel. Right. Love you, Mongo. Please, if you're out there watching, give a hand. Support a good guy.
So, 2012, I take my son to Japan. This is the year before he passed away, and Lawrence Taylor invited me to his birthday, or whatever it was, in Las Vegas. So Mongo was in town. So they had just remodeled the Gold Nugget, which was an old-time hotel there. They put millions into it, the big Shark Tank and all that. And I hadn't been around Steve, you know, maybe for a couple of years, you forget. He comes through the door with Lawrence Taylor. And I mean, you can't get mad, but man, he's one of the only guys who can get away with talking to anybody. Like, hey, everybody, nobody's safe. Hey, motherfucker. And you, who are you, honey? Nice to meet you. I'm Mongo McMichael. I mean, this is Lawrence Taylor. We're going up to some club. I've had a lot of fun in my life, as we're well aware. We don't go over any of that, decades of it. But that night with Lawrence Taylor and Steve in Las Vegas may be the most memorable night of my life. I know LT got divorced a week later, so Mongo, he can get away with being loud. He came to a Christmas party I had when I was in the Gold's Gym business. He came to Charlotte, just stayed it for a week. He came downstairs. I had like 300 guests at this when I used to have Gold's Gym was all over the state of North Carolina. And he came downstairs with a Santa Claus hat on and a Santa Claus jacket on and carrying a bottle of Jack Daniels and smoking a cigar. He looked like the guy from looked like Dan Aykroyd in Trading Places without the salmon hanging out of his thing. And in bankers, lawyers, he's going, ah, 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 ah. I go, Mongo, please. They don't care. They love this shit. Don't they hear it? I go, we'll find out. Just don't tell him to go to bed. He don't go to bed. I'm telling you, Eric will tell us. Mongo and Scott Hall would go to the Nitro, right?
Yep.
And nobody heard from him until Thunder. Both of them, MIA.
No, that you're right.
No, yeah. I know I'm right.
Yeah, you do.
I know I'm right.
No. Yeah. Well, man, you're right.
And by the way, when they got there, I don't know if they remember the name. I don't remember if they left. They remember leaving or arriving at Thunder. But Scott used to ride Mongo so hard, I used to think to myself, Mongo, why don't you just beat the fuck up? Because it's such an easy deal. And Mongo went, oh, I like this kid, you know.
It's got a good sound to it.
No, but you know, remember that? Scott would ride his ass every bar. I go, and then they'd end up kissing each other, going out all night long, and never return sometimes. 48 hours, where's Mongo? I don't know. Eric, have you seen him? Eric, have you seen Mongo? Nope. Kevin, have you seen Scott? No.
One night, because often we'd go to Nitro, and if we were close enough to the hotel, by the time we got back from doing the show live, the replay was on. So we'd all sit around and watch the replay of Nitro after the fact at the hotel bar. We had a blast. But Scott Hall just loved to push Mongo's buttons. Yeah. And Mongo would get hot. Occasionally, he would get a little hot. One night, we sat up till, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. I had an early flight. I finally get myself to bed. Lay down, I hear boom, 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 boom on my door. I go, what the hell is that? Bishop, open up! Fuck, now what? You know? Because in the position I was in, you're kind of herding squirrels most of the time anyway. You know? Just putting it mildly. And I looked out the little peephole, and there's Mongo standing there with a Smith & Wesson with about a 44 Magnum with an 8-inch barrel, and I'm thinking, shit. There's no way this ends up good. But it did. I opened the door because I was pretty sure he wasn't going to shoot me. He wasn't mad at me. I don't know who he was mad at, but he wasn't mad at me. So I opened up the door. I said, Mongo goes, here, kid, you need this more than I do. Turned around and walked away. It's in my safe. Thanks, Mongo.
He's obviously the most prolific bear who ever got into professional wrestling here in Chicago, but you've had many memories here in Chicago, Mick. Your first WrestleMania here in Chicago, that famous match with Edge here in Chicago. What stands out to you most about Chicago?
Oh, man.
Bad payoff, right, Mick?
No, because when I got to Chicago, I remember everybody from the office came out in later 96, because I believe it was the first time we'd sold out a large house show.
They were
shocked that I was still alive. And I'm still hanging in here. So I'm doing okay. But Chicago was always seen as the Rosemont was one of our best cities. So I was lucky my first WrestleMania teamed up with Leon against Davey Boy and Owen. It's not lost on me that I'm the only one still here, so you try to treasure those memories. But when I came back in 2006, you know, the storyline had been that you needed that magic WrestleMania moment to be a certifiable legend. You didn't need it when I retired for good the first time in 2000, the first time. And Shawn Michaels, rightfully so, started proclaiming himself to be Mr. WrestleMania. In my defense, I'm Mr. In Your House.
Yeah.
The number one name in secondary pay-per-views. And on my epitaph, it's going to read, "No one came through bigger when it mattered less than me." But I'd never had that truly great WrestleMania moment. And Edge, you know, with a great deal of help from Edge. Edge got me there. And I remember we went through that flaming table. And it's this strange, it's paradoxical feeling because I'm surrounded by this potpourri of burnt hair and charred flesh and blood. And yet I feel a huge weight lifted off my shoulder as Edge tells me he loves me in a way that doesn't seem even slightly homoerotic in wrestling, right? Two human beings telling you loved each other. And then afterwards, as if that wasn't enough, in things I never would have envisioned, when I broke into wrestling, I borrowed Ric Flair's shampoo and watched the rest of the show sitting next to Vern Gagne. So two things I would not have predicted when I broke into wrestling. Yeah, I sat next to Vern. Remember, he was there that day. He could have, but he did not. It was a fun night, and that was one of my best wrestling memories, and it happened here, right here, about 20 minutes away from Schaumburg.
I got to tell a great story, because he's watching. He wanted to be here. Bruce MacArthur. Bruce, going to tell the story, brother. Sorry, Lisa. So my friend Bruce MacArthur's family is the Wirtz family, right? They used to own the Bulls, the White Sox, I think. So they sold the Bulls through Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns the White Sox. They made huge money. Anyway, they had the United Center. So Eric and I did a couple of things that were real fun. But one night, Eric goes, let's do this thing with Bruce where we get Eric kicked out of the building. Right. That was so much fun. And Bruce was so damn but the thing about Bruce MacArthur and his family, you don't have to have fake cops. They have real cops. So we're having real police cars, nothing like they're doing now where it's, the guys walking around. You can see they're all ex-wrestlers or guys trying to be wrestlers, right? So they actually took Eric out of the building, and then we went downtown and partied all night long. And then, as Tony and Jim know, when the Horsemen were together, they used to own the Bismarck Hotel, and we'd get through wrestling, and we hired a limo driver that would take us around. And one weekend we went to Milwaukee, back to Chicago, whatever, like 3 days, Rockford, a 3-day loop, right? Always back to Chicago, and Dave would keep me up, Dave, all night long. So very similar to Baltimore, remember, Jim? We kept that guy all night long when we had the party in the penthouse in Baltimore at the Crockett Cup. I'm not married. I can't get divorced anyway. So, but anyway, Bruce, I know you're watching, and Bruce will give these guys a lot of money or contribute a lot of money to this. And Chicago has been, I can't tell you, the greatest city for me wrestling. I did have a good match with Steamboat here. I didn't draw the kind of money these guys did ever. But I've had more fun in Chicago than anybody at this table, I promise you.
There's a term that is used that I always equate with Mongo, and she's on scholarship, right? Because he would always say, "That girl, I'd like to put her on scholarship," right?
Thank you. Right. Yeah, great line.
Right. It was a great line. It was a great line. The last time I saw Mongo was one of the
Starcast, right here in this building. Yeah.
Right here in this building. And I went down to see him because he was signing autographs. And I walked down, and he hit me with that line. I went up to him. I shook my hand. I said, "Mongo Tony Schiavone." And he said, "Hey, I know who you are." And I'm thinking, of course he does, because unlike everybody here on the dais, I haven't aged. And
use promo code WHW at justformen.com.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you, Jimmy. Thank you very much. It's very soft, too. And the first thing he said to me, he said, "See a girl right there, what?" He said, "I wish she was on scholarship." And I'm thinking, yes! You
it.
Said it again. I love that term. It's the best,
it.
Man.
It's a good terminology.
Yeah, it is.
I love that term. I've had four that are still on full scholarship. Everything's a private joke hitting at me, right? First it's life insurance, now it's a scholarship.
On the Bobby Bonilla plan, right?
I know.
for Bobby Bonilla of the Mets, still paying off his contract 20 years later.
Yeah.
Right.
Contract players.
Right.
Actually, I'm over all that now. Finally.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Eric, Chicago was a big part of WCW. Some of the biggest moments in Nitro history, pay-per-view history. Not just Mongo, but you had Dennis Rodman as well. A lot of great moments here in WCW. What sticks out the most about Chicago to you?
Pizza, first of all. But I've often said, and I haven't spent as much time traveling as a lot of the people on this stage have, but I noticed right away that every market had its own personality. Philly was just a little different than New York, and New York's a little different than Chicago and all the way down the line. There was something about Chicago fans that made me feel at home. And I connected differently. And maybe it's because I grew up in Detroit. I think Detroit fans, Chicago fans are pretty close. But it's just the way you embrace your sports, the way you embrace the Bears, the way you embrace Mongo, the other sports teams here in Chicago. You guys are really loyal fans. And once WCW kind of got in the game and got pretty popular, coming to Chicago was really fun for me because I felt like, even though I wasn't from here, I felt like I was going home, if that makes sense. And it just, and it's because of y'all. You, Chicago has great fans. It's a great city for sports.
Tony, I'm curious from your perspective, you know, when Nitro is in its heyday, you start with Mongo. Later we would see other athletes involved in wrestling. Of course, the other channel would have Mike Tyson, but you guys had Dennis Rodman. Can you sort of describe what Dennis Rodman was to the pop culture in that era?
Well, Dennis Rodman was on the greatest basketball teams of all time. And there's a story out there that, and Eric, you can probably speak on this, didn't he show up to a Nitro event when he was supposed to be practicing with a team during the playoffs or something like that? I mean, he was his own man.
He still is.
And he still is, absolutely, right. And he had a presence about him. Listen, I was readily go up to Mongo and talk to him and meet him, but Rodman to me was like,
God, Tony, let's get right there. He cheated on Madonna. He was living with Madonna. It says it all.
Right.
And every time I see him, I said, how do you screw that deal up? She's worth $800 million.
Right.
After paying off two other guys $300 million. How do you screw up on Madonna?
I don't know. Maybe she wasn't that good. Could be. You never know.
She can't hold a candle to Lois, Giovanni. I'll tell you that.
And he walks in the ocean, center with Carmen Electra. I damn near died.
That's right.
Holy crap.
I can tell you a story about Carmen Electra.
Okay.
You know what they're doing right now with Dennis? Last Dance with Michael that was produced by ESPN last year, they're taking a whole new segment and shooting a special on going to get Rodman in Las Vegas.
Right.
And when they went to get him to bring him back.
Right.
So he's getting another payday for that. God bless him.
Yeah.
But he's the greatest rebounder in the history of basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Greatest rebounder in the history of basketball.
Yeah. And he also was in some of our biggest events. Yeah. I mean, he really, really was. If you think about what Dennis Rodman was a part of and how he was tied to WCW, and it was a big time for us. I mean, that... To me, what we did in WCW was unprecedented.
Did you get a raise?
I didn't ask for a raise.
So you didn't want the more money?
No, I was comfortable.
Well, we do want more money over at moneyformongo.com. Make a donation. Tony doesn't want it, but the Michael family could use it right now.
Yeah, but really, Mongo, Dennis Rodman, the thing that you did on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, those were things that back when Jim and I started in WCW back in the 90s.
We had David Allen Coe,
yes, right. Exactly. And we had Dave Casper, the tight end.
We had Waylon Jennings, too.
Yeah,
come on.
Right.
Wasn't just David Allen Coe. We had George Jones.
Yes, right.
Crockett. So.
Right, with the Crocketts. But that's just stuff that we dreamt about and wanted to get. And I remember one time, the Eagles head coach back at that time was, we were at the Philadelphia Civic Center, and I can't remember what
Dick
his name
Vermeil.
was. No, it was the other guy. I'm sorry. It may have been Vermeil. And someone said, he's here. Get the camera on him. My God, he's here. And, you know, and that's the way it was back then. But then as we progressed with Rodman and Mongo and bringing the stars in, it was fashionable to become a part of WCW. So I saw WCW grow, obviously under Eric's guidance, but we became mainstream, and it was a big deal. And I really think that Mongo being with the Bears and, of course, Rodman with the Bulls, I think that was all a part of building that up.
I think it's a big part of it.
Yeah.
A major part of it.
Right.
Of course, we're all here in a pretty interesting time in professional wrestling today, JR. You know, not too long ago, it felt like it was hard to imagine a wrestling world without Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
He used to promote wrestling.
I got it, kid. I know what I'm about to microphone.
I have to go, Jim. Would you?
Yeah, I'll take care of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Good talking to you.
Round of applause for Tony Schiavone, ladies and gentlemen.
Where are you going?
Tony says...
Where are you going?
Wearing Andre's old jumpsuit today.
I got a text from Tony Khan. I got to run. Oh. That's not true. That's not true.
Sting.
You don't, Tony. How can you contend with this?
What am I looking at? Okay. So.
It looks like a, what did you say one time? It looked like a button on a fur coat. How do you know? Is that wishful thinking on your part, honey? What did you ask me, Conrad?
Well, I wanted to get your take on Vince McMahon, no longer.
Well, he'll never be replaced. He will always be at the top of the mountain. Look what he built, and he built it from shit. You know, those little arenas and Smokey this, and had to deal with commissions and all that stuff. He's an amazing human being, and yes. Because you got to work this in. He's fired me 3 or 4 times. I don't give a shit. When he found out I didn't give a shit, it made it more fun for him. And he just kept firing me. But here's the news. He hired me back. He never hired me back for less money than I was making before I exited. So he's always been fair to me in that respect. Have we always agreed philosophically on how to present pro wrestling? No. Because I'm a pro wrestling guy, not a sports entertainment guy. I don't even know what that really means. I just said it to the hell of it, so it make a click. Really important to get clicks these days, you know. It's essential in your livelihood, in your life. What? You're talking too much, honey. See, this show's about us. And Mongo. I'm just saying. I'm just kidding you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Moneyformongo.com is where we do want you to send some clicks.
I'm trying to, Conrad. God damn it. I can't just do everything. I'm just one man here. I can't do everything.
Schiavone bolted.
He did.
He's going. He didn't go to speak with Tony Khan.
I will comment.
Tony Khan's not even up.
And the Vince McMahon thing. Wrestling, he meant everything to it. It meant everything to him, and he made... He made a lot of people rich. I don't care what you guys hear or don't believe or don't know or hear about how bad the royalties are and that. There are so many guys luckier than shit to have made the money they've made.
Yep.
To have made the money they made for doing so little, all because of him. If they had done what I did in the 70s and the guys, not just me, that whole era, 60s and all that, $15, 50 bucks a night, 300 fucking miles every night, you have no idea. They couldn't do it? They wouldn't do it. Who would?
Not in today's millennial generation.
No, but he had his dad before him and him, and he just had it's simply the balls to say, guys, we can either get bigger and compete with everybody or we can stay separate. And it wasn't the downfall to other people. It was just they didn't have the vision that he has, and look where it is now. The company, I mean, it can't run by itself, and I'm sure Stephanie Hunter will do a good job, but it'll always be Vince McMahon's company, in my opinion.
It's Vince McMahon's world.
Yeah.
Look at pro wrestling. Yeah. We can denigrate anybody that we choose to, and this certainly in this forum, but the issue is that McMahon his legacy and his image will never be replicated, period. Well, I didn't like that finish in 1973, and I don't know. Take it easy. It's fucking fiction. Easy. Easy. And he's the most powerful man that this business has ever known. He's the most powerful man this business will ever know. And those of you that don't like Vince because of a finish or an angle or he didn't give so-and-so his break, get over it. Yeah. Get over it. We wouldn't be here today in some shape, form, or fashion if it wasn't for guys like Vince McMahon and the passion of a guy like Mongo McMichael. They had something in common. They both believed in their mission. So I'm a big fan of McMahon's, and I'm a big fan of Mongo's. I love Mongo.
That's a great analogy. That's pretty nice.
Thank you. That's what I do for a living. I'm still in the business, Nate, but I never was a horseman like Jarrett claims to be. What the fuck's that story about? I didn't know Jeff was a horseman.
Love you,
JR. Oh, well, where'd that come from?
He's at the JW Marriott, baby.
I'm at the Renaissance.
Oh, he corrects it. Mick, I'm curious. You know,
where'd you move to? What hotel?
Renaissance. Isn't
it? Renaissance. Okay.
I think it is. I don't know.
I'll find you.
I'll look it up.
Don't give your room number.
I'm not Conrad. Don't worry. You're not the only smart fucking guy in the building. Mr. Podcast, Mr. I created everything, and I get first count of all the money. So there.
Moneyformongo.com. Mick, it's an interesting time to be a WWE fan. You tune in, and the shows start to look and feel a little different. What do you think of what Hunter's done so far?
Yeah. Man, I give him an A. I do. We said this on the podcast. You know, time will tell whether he gets that plus at the end of the A, but I pointed out also that in Jeff's dad's territory, as just a matter of course, bookers changed every 6 months because it was seen like you wanted fresh eyes on the product, and I think that's good. And I think there was a lot of frustration with the way Vince did things. I know my son was part of creative for 6.5 years, and I think Road Dogg quit specifically because he couldn't take the marker through the program. You know, 2 hours. How many times did you see Vince put a Sharpie through the program an hour or two before the show began? And that was the way he worked best. You know,
for Vince, so we didn't even have a format. We'll catch up with you. So we'll give you a page and time on live television.
When I was the commissioner, and we would begin with those 20-minute segments with a cast of a dozen or so, I remember my mom saying to me, how many days in advance do you find out what you're going to say? And I said, days? And she said, how many hours? And I said, hours? She said, well, when do you get it? I said, Mom, sometimes the pyro is going off and you're back there and Vince runs up to me and goes, oh, Nick, when you're out there, don't forget to call Stephanie a bottom-feeding trash bag. Hope I got... I said, that's your daughter. And he leans in and he goes, there's nothing I wouldn't do to get a pop in this business. That's the way he loved flying by the seat of his pants. But I think, you know, fresh eyeballs. Hunter's got some great ideas. Always had the utmost respect for Stephanie. And I think they're doing a good job. I was just never a fan of beating someone in their own town on principle or embarrassing them in their hometown. So it's like, couldn't we just try slipping Charlotte over in Charlotte? You know, couldn't we try having Sasha get the win in Boston? So I just think that a change is good. I owe so much of my life to Mr. McMahon. I'm worried about him. I think JR and I had talked about the fact that business was his life. He doesn't have a hobby. He does have his grandchildren. But I'm worried about him as a guy who really looks up to him and loves him. I'm worried about him. But he did an amazing job, and business changed the business forever.
When it's your life, trust me, it's my life too. I don't know why, but I can't ever get over it. So I can imagine he put a lot more time into it than I did, but it's 50 years this year for me, and I enjoyed it as much, and I just watched the last match again, and shit, I'm already trying to figure out how to do my last tag match. me and my daughter against Jeff.
There you go.
Against Jeff and Karen. Hey, the last tag match.
Can I tell a little story about your last match, Greg?
Please, please.
So, obviously, I'm really excited to be there, and you guys, Conrad's guys, come up to me with about a minute in advance and says, hey, do you mind saying something? And fortunately, I had my youngest son, Huey, who was sitting on my left, and he had just whispered in my ear like 30 seconds before that. He goes, Dad, this is better than SummerSlam. So, you know, and part of what he meant is we're right up there. We're so close to things. And I have Huey to my left, and there are three seats that say MC plus two. And it did not dawn on me until I was told that the Undertaker was arriving, that MC was Mark Calloway. So very quickly I go, Huey, can you move to the other side of me? He goes, why? I said, I want to sit next to the Undertaker. And so we're having this amazing time.
Yeah, who are you, right? It always is.
I see a Bret Hart at the end of the show, and I didn't even know Bret was there. He's down about four seats on the aisle. Yeah. He's sitting next to your dad, and so I go, Bret, and he thinks I'm waving to him. And he waves to me. I go, oh, come on over here. And he comes over with his wife, Vanessa. I said, you need to be here, because I was hoping that that would be the photo that was taken. And I talked to Jeff about this last night. I said, man, I've been around a long time. I said, even when I'm fortunate enough to have been in jail, you can speak to this. Usually, unless it's SummerSlam or WrestleMania, if you're in the main event, by the time you walk through that curtain, the back is being broken down. Most of the guys have left the second the final bell leaves, and you are all alone. You're with your partner, and then you're going to watch the show to the next day in catering. I can count on probably two hands the number of times I've seen the type of joy that was backstage following Rick's last match. People did not want to leave because they wanted to hang on to the way they felt. And I'm getting goosebumps as I talk about it, but it was really, I mean, I'm going to use the word beautiful because that's the way it felt to me. It was a beautiful scene, and I'm so glad that I was part of it. So thank you, Rick, for having me there as your guest. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to take credit for one thing in Rick's career. I taught him how to work through the break. He said, why are we doing it? We're not. You tell the story. It's better than me. Well,
what's the story?
What, working through the break.
Oh, yeah, working through the break. Jeez. You know,
he goes, what are you doing? I'm working with you.
Yeah, Rick and I have a match. Final match, as far as I'm concerned, of my career, October 2010. I did come back, and I was part of the Rumble in 2012. It was 2016. I don't count it as a match if you're on the no-touch list and your opponents are not allowed to touch you. That's not a match. So Rick and I have that match. He throws me off the ramp, and through no fault of his own, I overshoot it a little bit, and I land really hard. It rattled my brain to the point where I could not get out of bed to go to my book signing the next day. And I take the most pride in getting out there and doing the things I'm booked for. I said, I can't move. I cannot physically get out of bed. So I take this big bump, and we go to break, and at least in my head I'm like, I can rest. And all of a sudden I feel, boom, boom, Rick, what are you doing? He goes, we always work through the break, you know? I was like, no, this is where you grab a rear chin lock. Not today, brother, not today. It was a hell of a match. It was a hell of a match. If you go back and watch it, I remember it was getting a lot of accolades, and I thought, well, you know, basic brawl, but here's the deal. Every single thing we did looked good and was delivered with great, you know, great or bad intentions, depending on how you look at it. And man, I don't know if I've ever talked about it, Rick,
even,
but
even an average match can be good if you got a blade. I swear by that.
But this was
I can't
really
work without one.
But it was really good, and I felt and still feel really fortunate that you were the guy in there with that last match. Thank you, man. Thank you. And while I just had this idea, I'm flying home to see my mom. That's where my Dick Butkus poster is. It's framed, it's mounted, it's big, because it was a 24 by 36 inch poster anyway. And Dick put it in really bold Sharpie. And it's been in storage for several years. And I'd like to auction it for money for Mongo. So we will figure out how to do that, right? Maybe the next podcast. But that feels like the right thing to do. So we'll find out a way, because that it doesn't belong in storage. It belongs on the wall of a really big Bears fan. It's got some history in that. It hung on my over my bed for over 30 years, and now it's signed by the man himself, and I think we could help raise some money through that poster. So be on the lookout for that.
Right on. You know, I was sitting here thinking, I was looking down at JR, and JR said this line several years ago to me. He said that the talent in the ring basically writes, plays the music, and JR commentates, and he writes the lyrics. And I think that's very appropriate. But I was sitting there thinking about, we were talking about, we left out Carl Malone, basketball player, Rodman. As of late, they had Shaq wrestle. Just pop culture, one after another after another. But over the last 90 days, being in a part of Rick's last match, people would come up to me all over the place, and it's like, they asked me, Rick's doing this, and I said, Rick's hotter today from a marketing standpoint than he's ever been. He's a pop culture icon. And the reason I'm sort of tying this all together is, and we gave, as you guys say, gave Vince his flowers because of what he created. But at the end of the day, and this is where I challenge, you can be a Bear fan, you can be a Mongo fan, you can be a podcast fan, an AEW fan, a WWE fan. At the end of the day, what has driven my family since 1946 is this industry. In this room and in on this ring, we're all, at the very core, a huge fan of professional wrestling. There's nothing like it. Are we sport? No. Are we all entertainment? No. We are that hybrid, even if you're a fan or a performer or an announcer or an executive, whatever it is, in our DNA is something special and something unique. And look, the miles and the money and all that rolled into one, we all have one thing in common, and we love this industry. And we have one of our own that's down, and Mongo loved this business, and we've talked about that for a while as well. But I really challenge you, $1, $5, $10, money for Mongo. If you're a wrestling fan and love the industry, I just challenge you, hit that donate at moneyformongo.com.
Jim, it's a big weekend. We're in Chicago this weekend for AEW All Out. Of course, there's already been two live TV shows in the can. We had Dynamite and Rampage. What do you expect this Sunday as we're talking tomorrow on pay-per-view? 15 big matches. What do you expect?
15 matches?
I think counting the pre-show, there's a 15-match total.
Can you guys hear me, Eric? Well, I think it's going to be very unpredictable because I don't know how you book this card. I don't know how you have a match on Wednesday and your champion gets his ass whipped like a government mule, and then you expect to return it Sunday. Why do I need to return? You just got your ass whipped. So there's logical things we have to address, quite frankly. I think it's going to be a very challenging show for Tony Khan to book, but it's loaded. It's loaded. My biggest concern is the fact that I will definitely be wearing darks because a brother's got to piss. A brother's got to piss, Nate. And sitting out there with our group as it is that many hours, this is going to be a five-hour show. I'm not in favor of any five-hour show. It's just too long. Our attention spans are not going to maintain what it needs to need to be. But it's a chance for a lot of talents to clear the deck and make a name for themselves. I say that at every pay-per-view. It's not normal course of business to me. It never will be. It never has been. And I hope that some of these young kids realize that you may be on the second match or the third match. I only got 8 minutes or I only got 12 minutes or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Go out there and do your best and get over and make yourself famous. That's what you do. I think I said that one time with Jeff Hardy and Undertaker. Climb the ladder, kid, and make yourself famous. I meant every word I said. And same thing on Sunday night. I believe that some of these guys are going to be able to prove themselves and to their families and their friends and their peers that I got it. I got this. Let's hope that they're right. But I think Conrad's going to be a very unpredictable show. It's funny when you are been around as long as I have in that regard and you can't figure out a finish. I love that. I love that. And nor do I want to know any finishes. Why do I need to know the outcome of the presentation? Only for my ego. And that's it. So I don't need to know.
The main event is Dean and...
The main event is Moxley and CM Punk. Yeah. In a rematch for the world title. I'm curious, Mick, there's another match on there that stands out, and you've got a lot of history with one of these folks. We've got Bryan Danielson and Chris Jericho on pay-per-view.
Could be match of the year, Conrad. Could be match of the year because... Two old veterans who love their profession and they love where they've what they've accomplished thus far. You don't have two physical giants and all that other horseshit and all the measurables. I think Jericho and will have a chance, he and Danielson, to have the match of the night. How do they not have an opportunity for the match of the night? I think this is going to be one of the strongest wrestling pay-per-views that we've ever produced. And I really believe that. And it's been a really, you know, controversy follows pro wrestling. It's following it now. That's cool. So I'm interrupting your answer, Mick. I'm sorry. I've done that a lot in our career.
Don't worry about it.
I wanted to know, Mick, you know, you've been able to see what Jericho's done. Man, he has just continually changed his character. It feels like every time you think, well, that's got to be it for Chris Jericho, he comes up with something new.
Yeah, he never rides one train too long. Like, he could have, like, you just made the list.
He could still be doing that right now.
He had five or six things going at all times, something on the back burner, move something up to the front. Even if, like, you know, you remember he was doing it? Like, that didn't work for me, but at least he tried it. And then he would be on to something else. So he's constantly tweaking his image, managed to not just stay relevant, but be arguably a bigger star now than he's ever been. And Danielson, I'm just so happy for him because he loves wrestling. And he didn't, you know, he didn't leave willingly, you know. And I guess he's found a way to regain that health, and he's passed everything he's needed to pass. I just hope, JR mentioned 5 hours. That's a long time. I remember when I was Raw GM sitting with Stephanie and Rollins and Fergal Devitt were having a heck of a match, and the crowd just started chanting, "This belt's stupid." And it was just a sense that they needed a break after 3.5 hours. So I've said that there's an element of magic that's either in that arena or it's not, and it's that element of magic that takes a good match and makes it into a great match or a blade. But without that element of magic, it's really difficult to take a great match and make it a classic that stands the test of time, and it becomes really difficult to have that classic at hour five, which is why the WWE manias have been so much better divided into two nights. So I think
imagine what you're following. Everything,
right? And everything. A couple of years ago, I was watching the show, and it was a well-booked mania, and I just found myself going, oh, I forgot about this. I dread the fact that I have to watch six more matches to get to the main event, no matter how well it had been booked. So I think whether or not they steal the show is in part where they're booked on the card.
This weekend is a big weekend for WWE, too, Eric. They're doing the Castle Show over in Cardiff, and a lot of people feel like this is going to be Drew McIntyre's night, or afternoon, I guess, maybe. Right now. It's happening right now. Roman Reigns has been the champ for 2 years. If you were booking it, Eric, what would you do?
I'd resist the temptation to book for the local market. As cool as it is, it would be for Drew, and there would be a lot of fans that would get really excited about that because it was in his hometown. You got the rest of the world to worry about. Unless that was the plan a year ago, if they've been building to this and this is the plan and they know where they're going after this, kind of doubt it. But if they do, That's great. I'm like me. You got to hold it.
You got to keep rolling in that spot, hoping that rock shows up.
That's right. Yeah, anything that
I totally agree with that thought process.
Anything that takes away from the potential of Rock and Roman.
And that sounds like, you just hear little bits and pieces, but it sounds like they're leading that way.
If that's the game plan.
I'd love it to happen. Hey, I suggested something on our podcast. You know, we do have a podcast, Conrad and I, when he shows up. I can't help the records we're setting. It's not my fault. I don't know where the fuck I was. I just lost my train of thought.
You mentioned something about Rock and Roman, maybe?
Oh, yeah. I think Rock and Roman would be obviously an amazing attraction. And no, there's going to be a title involved. It's two stars. Stars. But, man, I don't know. I'm thinking the way to get Rock on WrestleMania is having in a mixed tag with his daughter in a tag match. Why wouldn't that work?
You high?
Huh? Oh, I'm getting ready to get high.
I will tell you something.
How much longer is this going to last? I'm just curious.
I think Mick knows this. Jeff and I both. I know that when you've had as long off period, I don't care what is the Rock now, 45?
50.
Okay, to turn 50. Okay, so he hasn't wrestled in what, 10 years? Since John Cena, right?
4 or 5.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years. Okay, well, maybe.
Whatever.
Whatever the point is it's really hard. Big difference. He looks like $1 million. Unbelievable physique. Always has, but it's so hard to get in wrestling shape. Trust me.
Well, he's doing the work with his daughter.
Yeah. What's that?
He worked at a mixed tag with his daughter.
He did?
No.
I mean, hypothetical. If we were to wrestle Roman, who has been.
Well, that's the hit. That's the hit.
Yeah. If that takes place, it's hard to get in that wrestling condition, and he needs to start.
I'm with you.
It's a whole different, the physical aspect and the cosmetic and all that. But he's such a competitive guy; he'll want to be, Roman's equal, in terms of, just like we all try to be, hold our end up. Does that make sense? I wrestled Shawn, and Shawn carried me for 30 minutes. I don't care what anybody says; I'm telling you, at WrestleMania. Whatever people thought of the match, Sean carried me. I was 59 years old, and yet was I in good shape? Yeah, but I could not go. I couldn't hang with Shawn Michaels. I probably couldn't have hung with him in my prime. But it's harder, and each day you're away from it, to get in wrestling shape, where you're here, good here, and he's so competitive, he'll want to be Roman's equal. And but it's 5 months away, 6 months away, no, 8 months away. You need to start, they need to get that figured out by December, I would think, and to get to work on it.
Here's one of the things I love. There's six of us up here, and there is, Santa Claus isn't real, and professional wrestling is scripted,
what?
And everything that goes with that. But we're sitting here just... Oh, sorry.
I'm Santa Claus.
My bad. Nick, apologies. So the Easter Bunny. But anyway, here's Sixes up here. We got some time in the industry, and we're talking about, will Drew beat Roman? Will Mox and Punk, what's the finish? Danielson and Jericho. We're all still the biggest fans in the world. And when you, we're up here debating it and all this. I think I'm going to go on the side of, I think, not because of the hometown, although it's going to be a very legendary beauty shot. But Drew winning there sets up future business. But they hadn't had a touring champion because it's been with Brock and Roman for 2 years. And so for business sake, get it on, guys. JR's booked more shows than anybody in this banner. You want your champion out touring. So I think for the industry, and they do 20, 30 shows a month non-televised, so get the champion out there touring. But my personal opinion, Rock versus Roman, does the belt make two shits who in drawing money? I don't think at all. It gives an opportunity to have that title match on somebody else and put Rock and Roman up top. Because, Rick, I know it takes a while to get in, but I don't think they're coming to watch The Rock do Hurricanranas and five-star matches.
They're coming to watch him drop the elbow. What I'm
saying is at 50, he'll want to do that.
Yeah. I get it.
And I'll tell you, with social media the way it is today, if Roman's not the champion, it won't be the same. I disagree. The flagship match, I don't care. People have always tried to put the title. I've seen so many different times in a different scenario, like before the Bunkhouse Stampede. I've seen it. The championship match has got the Roman, I think, to be as pure and have to be to showcase something different. Roman's got to be a champion. Because the minute if Roman loses along the way, it social media, it diminishes. It is the world we live in. You know, people.
I love the debate.
Yeah.
Selfie.
It is just a debate. But I agree with you personality-wise. They don't need the belt. But I think for business, you know, it just makes it a bigger event for the world's title. There's nothing bigger than Jim Ross saying or Tony Schiavone or anybody, ladies and gentlemen, this is for the world heavyweight championship.
You know what's really cool is you guys just got to experience what it would be like to sit down in a booking meeting when people are sane. Like, no, but seriously, you get to hear how Ric Flair's mind works creatively, how he would build based on his 50
years later this month
in the business. You just got a master class. Jeff Jarrett, we didn't always and probably still don't see eye to eye creatively on a lot of things, but he's really fucking smart. He's really smart. And to be able to sit here and just listen to two of these great minds debate entirely different creative perspectives is pretty awesome. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Ross, put your hands together. He's out of here. Thank you so much for joining us today, JR.
Hey, a brother's got to pee. All right? I'm so sorry about my...
Find us two flight attendants.
Yeah. Well, it works half the time. I felt so embarrassed that night. God damn. It looked like a child holding a big red apple.
Go to your room, Jim.
MoneyForMongo.com is why we're here, and we really appreciate the voice of professional wrestling. One more time, Jim Ross, ladies and gentlemen. MoneyForMongo.com is why we're here. And Mick, they're dropping like flies on your side of the table.
I'm okay.
I've
peed twice since we've been here, so I'm okay.
I'm curious, you know, when you take a look at modern wrestling, what's going on with the current WWE product, what's going on with the current AEW product, is there one talent in particular that you think, boy, if I had one more match... Not now, but yeah. Back in the day, like, man, I could have done something special with this guy.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that stands out that gets your creative juices flowing?
Well, I love what Moxley's doing. I really do. First of all, for having the strength to realize he had an issue and to address that and come back from rehab. I know he's got a beautiful wife and a small child, but he just loves the business so much that he reminds me of that classic traveling champion. He's going to Japan. He has a list of things he wants to do, styles he wants to do. He loves the wild stuff. I was there when he and Nick Gage had one of the hardcore matches for GCW, and I love their show because that's the only hardcore match on the show. But I really admire what he's done, and I think if I had that one match, which I don't, unless it's cinematic, that's my way out. Cinematic, Doubtful. But I love what he's doing, and I love the intensity of the promos. And that's, I would, you know, this. So when we talk, I think I mentioned this last night, talking about Rick and I in the bloodiest interview segment of all time. Do you remember that, Rick? In TNA, yeah. Terry Taylor comes in, he says, you guys have 10 minutes, just do that thing between the two of you that only you two understand. Which means we're not going to tell you what to say. You get 10 minutes. So I said to Rick, Rick, I'm going to ask for a last man standing match and make me work for it. And he goes, I will. And we get out there, and all of a sudden, Rick starts whacking away at his head, and he get the scar tissue starts flowing blood. And I think, I know he's a nature boy, but I'm not about to be shown up. And Jeff was there. He's like, I can't produce blood that way. But doggone it, Robert Fuller taught me how to give a hard way, and I'm going to do it to myself on this. So Rick's bleeding, and then I go, you boom, boom, boom. And we're this close to each other. And it was like one of those things that made me feel alive, you know, that made me feel alive, and I loved it. So I think the intensity of the promos is what I would really admire and look forward to with a guy like Jon Moxley.
And I read Moxley's book. That almost happened, right?
It almost happened, at least.
A conversation. What happened there?
Well, I failed the impact test.
Okay.
Yeah. Two neurologists. I realized it was not going well. And so independently of WWE, I went to Robert Cantu at the Boston Center for Traumatic Encephalopathy. It's called the Concussion Legacy Center now. But as long as I can continue to say Boston Center for Traumatic Encephalopathy, I think I'm going to be okay.
I couldn't begin to say that. And by the way, nothing wrong with going to rehab.
No, I mean, all the I have power to. I mean, it's the best thing.
Doesn't always work, but it's 4 weeks away for the shit. And
but I think
I did 35 days.
This is, I think, you guys will appreciate my answer to Dr. Cantu, who's one of the most noted neurologists in the world, and he said you should never wrestle again. And I looked at him and I said, I can work an entire match around my left knee, which means. I've still got one more left in me. Like, I accept that you said words, but they just physically passed from one ear out the other. And then he looked at me and he said, Mr. Foley, when I met you 2 weeks ago, you struck me as a bright young man. Those are his words, young man. He says, I've been reading up about you. He says, you've got a lot to live for. He said, if you want to try to find another neurologist to clear you, that's up to you. But I'm telling you, you should never wrestle again. And it was like, the bat was out of my hand, and I felt a weight off my shoulders. First thing I did when I got in the car was call Edge because, you know, his career at that time had been taken away from him. And now my career is largely done, but it's just a matter of retiring on your own terms as opposed to somebody else's terms. But I was good with it. I was good with it, and some of you have heard me tell the story that the most difficult thing all of us face, I believe, challenge-wise, is to find something that makes us feel like we did when we were in that ring. And it's really difficult for a lot of guys to go from being in the action figure rack next to Spider-Man to trying to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life. And that's why I'm so grateful for the avenues I have. You know, the podcast with Conrad. I go out there and I tell stories, slightly exaggerated for your listening pleasure, on my one-man shows. And even the goofy cameos I do, it's all given me a chance to perform. So I appreciate all of you who continue to make me feel like someone. But this afternoon's not about me. It's about Mongo. So, again, please go to Money for Mongo. Every little bit counts. It really does. And there really is strength in numbers. Thanks.
Well said. Jeff, we're starting to wind up, and you've been in the headlines most recently. Everybody wants to know, what's Jeff doing next? I don't know if you read yesterday's Observer, but he had a couple paragraphs about you. Everybody wants to know. You've kept them guessing. You look phenomenal. About a month ago, some people would say as good as ever in Ric Flair's last match. I can't thank you enough for what you did. I know it meant a lot to Rick, too, and it was a phenomenal performance. But what's next for you?
You know, I'll get emotional thinking about this.
Woo, we love you.
Because
you do it to me every time.
I got a second lease on life and went to treatment and came out, and they teach us something in treatment to live one day at a time. Literally one day at a time. And if you would have told me this time last year, Top Guy Weekend is what's going on here, folks that aren't aware that are watching Money from Mongo. But it's, Conrad, Top Guy Weekend is for our Patreon members. Last year when I came up here, I weighed about 25 pounds less. I'd gotten sick. But I came home from Chicago and told myself, because I'd been getting calls and had no idea where I was going to really take my life or my career. You know, during COVID and pandemic, I'd gone to WWE and back and the Hall of Fame and just all kind of stuff. But I really decided, made up my mind, is I'm going to get in shape and just see what happens. Literally just see what's happened. I've had some one-offs on this, but if you told me this time last year that I was going to get the opportunity to have Ric Flair's last match and everything that went with that, I'd have said, you're smoking crack. There's no way that would happen. So what's going to happen for Jeff next? I really have no idea, but I do know one thing is, from the time I wake up, from the time I go to sleep every night, I do everything I can to be better than I was yesterday. And I've just kind of let God take me down that road, because the reason I got emotional just then is me and Mick, in a way, started together in Tennessee. He came down early, but his legendary career, and we've talked about a few other folks, but to get that call or fail that test, I'm blessed. I'm 55 and still have the health to get in the ring and carry his ass for 30 minutes. But no, I do. So, you know, when we think about why we're here, moneyformongo.com, living one day at a time has a completely different perspective in so many ways. So, folks, one last time. Mongo was incredibly gifted athlete, but he's facing some tough times, and the real deal is his family. Steve's in a chair. He'd do anything to get out of that chair and provide for his family. There are real consequences, financially, emotionally, spiritually. But if you can do anything and help Steve, personally help Steve out to take care of some financial burden, it would be a great, great thing. So moneyformongo.com.
Eric, we're wrapping up. Any final words about Mongo before we go off the air here?
Yeah, real quick. I think I can't say anything better than these gentlemen have said here tonight. But here's the one thing that I do want to say about Mongo. A lot of people came in the position that I was in. I met a lot of people who wanted to come into the wrestling business for the opportunity, the money, the exposure, the rub, whatever the case may be. Steve came to WCW and was excited about being a part of WCW because he was one of you. He's a wrestling fan first. Happened to be a Super Bowl champion, an amazingly talented guy with a larger-than-life personality. But first and foremost, he was a wrestling fan. And wrestling fans are some of the most loyal fans in the country. I believe that. I really do. Let's prove it tonight. Money for Mongo.
Moneyformongo.com is why we're here. Rick, any last words about your great friend Steve McMichael?
Well, Mongo's watching this, you know. So, Mongo, I know you've laughed. Take this for serious, because I'm going to make you laugh one more time, because there's always another story. So, WCW, Betty Boob's MGM. Eric, remember?
The Betty Boob Bar, yep. MGM Grand.
Yeah. Mongo says, go upstairs and put your robe on, I dare you. Mongo, don't ever dare an inch for it. Upstairs, down in the green robe, da-da, right in the Betty Boop. Sat down with Mongo and kept on drinking. Completely naked. Had my shoes on.
Rick can close the show like only the nature boy can.
Mongo, that's it, brother. I'll see you in about a half hour, brother. I'm on my way.
Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in.
Love you, Steve.
Please like and share this. Give all you can. Moneyformongo.com. Give it up for Mick Foley, Ric Flair, Jeff Jarrett, Eric Bischoff. Mongo! Mongo!
Thank you, Conrad Thompson, for making this possible for all of us. All of us. My last match, this format, one guy put all this together. It's not us. Right here, one guy thought of this, one guy put it together. Thank you.